This episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast is brought to you by SDR Pods. Learn how we can build you a fully equipped sales development team to execute on personalized multi-channel prospecting and book you more meetings at the link below. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast. Today, we have a really, really interesting episode for you because a lot of us thought cold calling was dead. Hell, the predictable revenue book even said cold calling was dead. But as the sales landscape quickly becomes more and more saturated with more and more tech, many reps are realizing that the phone is actually, in spite of it all, the fastest and most effective tool for booking meetings. I'm your host, Sarah Hicks, and today on the Predictable Revenue Podcast, I'm going to be chatting to a veteran sales rep and thought leader all about the phones because cold calling is back, baby. He's currently the head of East Coast sales at American Public Media, where he has been 4 years. Previously, he worked at CBS selling national and local radio and digital products. He enjoys the thrill of the chase in sales and is always looking for unique ways to break through to his prospects. Kevin Gilman, welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast.
Thanks, Sarah. What an opening. That was great. Yes, so I read that from you guys saying cold calling was dead, which I disagreed with then. I still disagree with. Not only is it back, but it never went anywhere. So
there you go.
I'm excited to do this.
Absolutely. Yeah. Really excited to dive into it. Excited to hear the ways that you have been, absolutely hammering the phones nonstop, how you were still making it effective when so many people thought it wasn't. And then even more looking forward to what you can tell our sales reps out there to do today to kind of take that back if they haven't been using it. So to start off, Kevin, tell me, how do you start from the beginning? You know, you're gonna do a cold call session. You've got to start from scratch. What's the first thing that you do?
Well, I think it starts way before you get to the cold call part. It's organization. And this is not just organization for cold calling. This is organization for your outreach in general. I mean, there are endless podcasts and articles and thought leadership on LinkedIn to tell you how to organize your accounts. Find what works best for you and do what works best for you. And truthfully, you're going to change it multiple times per year. As we all know, things constantly change. Organization is going to be your first step. And from organization, what I mean is how I do it and what works best for me is I separate my top 100 prospects. People are moving in and out of that group all the time. My tier two, my tier three, and then just kind of prospects that if anything comes from it, anything comes from it. Great. So on my top prospects, I need to find a phone number for them. I want a mobile number. I want a direct. I'm going to scour. I'm going to get referrals. I'm going to do anything I can to get into those prospects and get a number. I'm going to try everything I can to get all the information about these people. These are my top game-changing, I call them whales, whatever you want to call them. These literally are year changers and potentially career changers for you. So I get all of my information prior to reaching out to whoever it may be. I source their LinkedIn, their Twitter, their Facebook, their Instagram, their TikTok, whatever new channel is coming about. I'm going to find every single thing I can about them. They like dogs. They went on a trip. They're from here. They went to this college. Everything I can, put it on in front. You never know when that information on the phone, in an email, on LinkedIn is going to come into play. And you'll be surprised how much that you even remember. As you go through, because remember, these are your top prospects. So if you do all of that before you get to the cold call, then I think you're really ready to go because you have everything you need at your disposal at that point.
Okay, got it. So I want to touch on personalization because you, of course, talked about this research, what you're looking for. And personalization, much like the power of the cold call, is another one of these like polarizing topics in sales strategy. Is it worth the time spent on personalization? Is there such a thing as personalization at scale? Does it even matter? So what do you think? Your take is obviously that you love personalization. So how do you think it stacks up?
Well, I would tell you this. You got to know when to personalize and when not to personalize. I think that is really what it boils down to. I do both. I think you really should do both. That's the answer. Your top prospects, you should be personalizing. You should spend that extra time with them. These are game changers for you. This is the one where you're going to have to celebrate if you land this account. So yes, you should be personalizing, spending that extra attention. These bottom tier accounts, don't waste much time on them. And I'm not saying they can't move up to tier two or your top prospects, but right now, this is where they're at, whether they're too small, they don't necessarily fit your target market. Just send the repeat emails, the repeat phone calls, whatever you're doing, just almost automate everything there. So personalization is both good and bad. The important thing is you got to know how to do it and really dive in deep to where your best channels are going to be. I leave a Facebook window open, a Twitter window open, an Instagram window open. I'm usually able to get pretty much everything I need from someone, just copy pasting the name, pull in, grab everything I can, type in my sales loft and call it a day. So yeah, I think it's important to do both.
So what type of stuff exactly are you looking for when you're looking for personalization content?
I will tell you, I have found everything and anything. Look, the basics, and we've all gotten these emails, and I think it's a little played out at this point. It's like, hey, you went to this college like so-and-so. Yeah, I mean, certainly, look, that's, I'm not going to tell you I haven't done it, but that's like my last resort. And there's people out there, there's just not much on. I'll use that if I need to. I wrote an email today to a woman I saw via her Facebook that she had twins. They were roughly the same age as my twins. So that's a unique experience. Like, I was able to relate to her a little different. She didn't answer me yet, but it was able to at least when she opens it up, be like, oh, wow, this is different than every other email I got today. When she's the CMO of a huge company, I'm imagining she's getting a lot of emails. I'm pulling vacations they took, what they did that weekend, what sports they have on their profile, their kids play, certainly universities, as I said. Facebook is a goldmine sometimes because you can see, like, I saw a prospect today. He belongs to so-and-so country club. I'm like, hey, he was in the Northeast. I'm like, golf season's only a couple days away, blah, blah, blah. Like, that differentiates me than anyone else. Like, not only do I know more about him than anyone else, but I know that golf season is coming up because I can relate to that. So I'm able to, like, hopefully get in the door quicker and easier than everyone else can.
Right. So something that I've heard people talking about is, like, okay, when you're using personalization content, it's got to be something that you can tie back to your value prop. Yeah. How do you feel about that statement?
In a perfect world, I do. I guess I kind of cheat in a way. I will put a GIF or something in there, and I'll say something like, well, in all seriousness, here's why I reached out. So I don't think you need to. I've gotten those emails. I think they're great when you get them. I don't necessarily think you have to. If you can and you're witty and you can pull it off, good, go for it. But I don't think you need to.
Right. So it's more about finding something that'll just make you stand out rather than it having to be something that is specific to, like, the problem that you're trying to solve for them.
For me, yeah. I'm a big believer in sales is about what works for you and Absolutely. How it helps you get your job done. And if spending more time on these top email people and tying it back in a certain way is landing you better for you, go for it. Do it.
Well, then let's talk a little bit more about time. When do you do this research? Are you doing it before you pick up the phone? How much time do you spend on it? How do you kind of balance that with all the rest of the things you've got to do as a sales rep?
Yeah. So when I load a new prospect, or typically the way I prospect is by account. So, like, I'm working on new account A and I load in everyone into my sales loft and Salesforce that is coming from this company. I typically try to do it then, because that's usually the easiest time and you can use it all the way through the funnel at that point. That's the optimal time. And I would tell you 80% of the time, that's what I do. However, I will always have something before I make that first phone call to them, which is typically on my day three, or certainly before they get to the end of my funnel. Hardly ever does someone get to the end of my funnel where I don't have that information.
Right. Okay. So kind of batch that when you get the new account in, because you might have a couple, mm-hmm. if not several people from that same account that you're going to be reaching out to. So do all your research on the account, on the people at the beginning when you're first importing them into that sequence. And then you can always refer back to it at each kind of step.
Yeah, I think it's important. I look at my workday as, like, precious from the hours of, like, my workday is like 7:30 in the morning to like 4:30 in the afternoon, because that's what works for me and my family right now. So when the kids go to sleep, my wife's doing whatever she needs to do at that point. At like 8:30 to like 10 on some nights, that's when I'm doing, I don't do outreach then, but that's when I prepare and do these things for the next day or following days or coming there. You can do as much research as you want at 8:30 at night and not bother people. Mm-hmm. So that's when I try to find ways to get it done.
Cool. And then what about some other kind of time management tips, especially with calls? Because if you're targeting many people across, like, different industries, different time zones in your sequences, what do you do to kind of manage all those different calls that you're making to all these different types of people?
Yeah. So thankfully, I only sell in the East. So my time zones are not too diverse. Every once in a while, and I shouldn't say that, I do have people in Europe and Israel that I do reach out to. So that certainly is at play. Thankfully, and I can't speak for every program, but SalesLoft is so good about sorting by time zone. I would imagine the other programs do as well. So when I have a call set up that day at 7:30 in the morning, it's prime time to call Israel and Europe at that point. So I'm ready to rock and roll on those calls. I am not calling East Coast people at 7:30 in the morning. 8:30, 8:45 is about the earliest I'll call someone at that point. I would call a little bit earlier if everyone was going back into the office at this point, because you'd be surprised how many times you're catching people on the way to the office. You can actually have a pretty good conversation then. But right now, in the last year, I'll call all day long until about 5 o'clock at night.
Well, we've talked about some of the prep and some of the kind of logistics that go behind it. Now let's talk about the channel itself. Why is the phone your favorite channel?
Well, I love the phone because it is the clearest way to get an answer from someone. Now, granted, I get it. You're going to have a low pickup rate. You're going to have a low response rate, whatever you want to call it. But man, it is so effective when you get that person on the other end of the line. I'm going to be a lot different than a lot of sales thought leaders or whatever. I love a no just as much as I love a yes, because I now know exactly where this company stands. And if it's a true no for a reason, hey, we're going through a transition, this doesn't make sense for us, call me in 6 months, great, we'll do. I'm not going to fight you on it. Have a good day. Now I know I can move someone else into that spot. I don't have to waste time and outreach on that person. So cold calling is my favorite one. That thrill is, like, I've been doing this for 20 years, and that, like, I still get a little bit of a butterfly, like, calling, because you don't know what's on the other end of that line. A lot of times you don't know how their day is going, what their life is like. You don't know anything. You get hung up when it's fun. The thrill is just, you don't know what's there.
That's so funny. What you call a thrill, some people call just sheer terror. So is this something that you, like, just felt naturally? Is it something that you had to, you know, warm up into as you practiced? How do you now have this mindset where it's like, ooh, the thrill of the chase, rather than just like, oh my God, what's on the other end of the line?
Yeah, I think it's one of those, I don't want to date myself too much because I'm really not that old, but I've been doing this for 20 years. And like 20 years ago, email was still like a naughty thing almost, you know, it was almost like texting a client now. It's like, God, you don't want to spam their inbox with like emails. Like 20 years ago, what we do now with email, they'd be like, oh my God, you guys are inhumane. So I kind of grew up in the sales world on just cold calling. And it wasn't like, I would sit down like with like a rudimentary like legal pad and just be like, all right, let's start going today. And that's kind of just what you did. And you got over it. You're like, early sales for me, and look, and the way I started in media sales, they would hire 10 people, and like, if one made it, great. And the only way you're going to make it is if you just made a boatload of calls and got a couple meetings out of it. So I got you, it's a feast or famine. You either survive or you die. So I learned to get used to it really quick.
So what are your tips for the new sales reps that are coming from this generation where, you know, they text before they call and they email before anything else? Like, what is your tip for getting over that?
Yeah. So first of all, as I said earlier, I'm a big believer in what works for you and what works and what do you think works for your clients. So I don't believe I'm in an industry where you can just text your way to success, but if that works for you and whatever you're selling, go for it. Like, I'm not here to tell you how to do your sales job. What I'm here to do is show you that like cold calling is not scary. You can do it effectively. So for someone who's new to cold calling, you are going to make mistakes. Just once you know that and you're comfortable enough with it, I still make mistakes. People that have been doing this for 40 years still make mistakes. You're going to call someone the wrong name. You're going to say the wrong company name. You're going to make mistakes. Like, we're all human. You may lose a sale because of it, but I can promise you, you're not going to get fired because you made a mistake on a cold call. So I'm here to tell you, and you can have your boss call me if you get fired because of that, because I'll help you find a job, because you're not getting fired because of that. But yeah, like you just, it's a baptism by fire. You just got to dive in knowing that you're going to make mistakes, knowing that you're going to stink, knowing that you're going to sound like a robot the first 100-ish calls you make, until you're able to just know your product inside and out, know a lot about your personal and the other line's business, and truly how you can possibly help them. Once you have that, cold calling is just an easy way to get in touch with people.
Tell me in a little bit more detail how you have that cold call. So we're over the kind of fear of making the call. We're on the line. What does a really good cold call look like?
So Sarah picks up the phone. I'm a big believer in, I mean, look, we all know the person on the other end of that line is human. They've dealt with their own crap that day. They have kids running around. They're in a fight with their significant other. They have got their own stuff going on, just like we all do. So there is so many better people out there than me, the Chris Vosses, the Justin Michaels of the personality and how to technically do these things. I just treat them like a human. Like, hey, Sarah, how are you? just very basic, very right to the point, very like, and 95% of the time I'm going to get, good, what's this in reference to? And like, you get that. I'm okay with that. Like, hey, Sarah, this is why I called. I head to sales for Marketplace, and we do a really good job reaching CISOs. And I imagine that's who you guys are trying to reach. Do you have 25 seconds? I can just break down for you what other companies like you guys have done in the past with us. Very, very rarely do I get a no from that. And if you get a no, okay, you call back tomorrow. It's not the end of the world. And usually they say yes. And then that's just selling at that point. You're basically just repeating what you would put into an email for them at that point. And then the hope is to have a conversation. I always say, and I say it many times to younger sales reps, we have a tendency as sales reps to get the prospect on the phone and we're like, oh my God, we got it. Here we go. And we start spewing our life story, our company story, what our costs are, what our benefits are, everything. Like, just take everything and figure it out yourself. And it's like, no, all you're doing, like, I look at it as like almost like a SEALs Team 6, like a tactical mission here. Like, get in, get out, get the information you need, set the meeting, and get out. And very, very, very rarely you're going to get someone who wants to have the meeting right then. And look, if you get that, good for you. It's unlikely. But you set the meeting for whatever works for the prospect at that point. Get in, get out. Get what you came to get there for and move on to the next phone call at that point.
Cool.
I think that's really important.
Cool. Yeah, definitely coming in quick. So help me lay it out. So you mentioned you come in with like a friendly greeting. That's you're speaking to another human being on the other end of the line. So you're going to approach them like you're talking to any other human being. They may or may not respond with anything particularly friendly, but you've like broken that initial barrier. Then next you came in with the kind of like laying out their assumed circumstances. Now, not assumed in kind of a negative way, but just, hey, I've researched your company. You look like this. Is that true? How would you kind of define that little first step of the call?
That's really like essentially my value prop almost, kind of in a hidden way. I kind of hide it in there and kind of say like, hey, Sarah, like, I believe you guys are selling to CXOs. Like, a lot of companies that sell like CXOs that have worked with us typically see this. Is that common for you guys? And sometimes you're going to get someone who's going to give you no information back. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you're going to get someone who's just going to start spewing. And you got to be ready to roll with whatever you got. Like, you got to follow that path wherever the person on the other end of it takes it. Eventually, you're going to get somewhere along the line, usually, where someone's going to say, by the way, what is this in reference to again?
Yeah. So, yeah.
They may start spewing and then get to that, which is fine because now you got way more information. And honestly, you're writing notes as you go. And even if you don't set the meeting at that point, you're now using that when you talk to them or emailing them later. Hey, Sarah, when we spoke on March 9th, you said blah, 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 blah.
Right. So kind of you're both with that first little piece, you're both checking that it's the right person, sort of like, you know, figuring out if you're in the right place and highlighting a pain that you think they could have, that you could solve. And you kind of wait for that. You get that temperature check or that buy-in. Like, does any of that ring a bell? Does this make sense to you? That kind of thing. And at that point, they either answer that question or it's their opportunity to say like, yeah, why are you calling? And either way, you've sort of got permission then to say like, well, customer story. Here's a customer story of how we've helped companies and people that look like you. Is that worth learning more about?
Yeah. So, yes, 100% all that. I'm not a big just start dumping customer stories on them because, one, a lot of my clients that I work with that are in similar spaces, they don't want to give a lot of that information up to their competitors. And I always look at it like, yeah, they're never going to find out. But I like, you know, I like to hold that little bit of secrecy back because that's their business. I don't want to mess them up. So I like, and if they have a client on the phone, ask me, yeah, we work with a lot of cybersecurity companies like bang, bang, bang. I'll name them, but I won't get into the specifics. But yeah, I mean, as I said, I'm trying to get in and out here. Like, thankfully, I worked and always have worked in my sales career at a place that is recognizable. I worked in sports radio at CBS for a long time. Like, people had heard most times of my product before. I'm now working at the largest business program on radio. Like, most of the people I'm reaching out to likely have heard of us before. So that does help a lot.
Yeah. Build that credibility. Mm-hmm. Right. Absolutely. Okay. So we've talked about the call opener. We've talked of kind of like the loose structure that conversation is going to follow. Obviously there's a human element and it's going to take any number of paths from there. How do you get to your answer? How do you get to kind of like figuring out whether they want to have this conversation? How do you get out, I guess, if you're saying you want to go in and out, how do you get out?
I think that's largely going to be determined on what answers they're giving you as they go through. It's like you're following this roadmap, and the further down this roadmap you go, it can start diverging in many different ways at that point. But somewhere in there, somewhere along the line, it's very likely they're going to give you some bit of a nugget that is going to allow you to hook them potentially. Like, hey, Sarah, you told me you guys are having trouble doing this, or other cybersecurity companies are having trouble doing this. Is that a problem you guys feel? And you get a yes or no, and sometimes you may get something. Oh, Siri just went off. I guess that was, Siri wants to listen in. But you'll be able to find some type of a hook to close in there somewhere. And I think that's literally going to differ every call. And honestly, I think it's okay if you get the person on the line. Like, you're going to hear salespeople say, like, once you got them on there, like, you can't let them off the hook. Like, I don't think that's necessarily true. Like, you're interrupting these people's lives. We're all getting hundreds of phone calls from car warranties and donations to this and that. Like, you're an interruption. Like, you got to remember that. What you do afterwards, if you don't land that call, is important as well, because then you need to really circle back with the new knowledge you just got, whether A, that's the right person or not, and you're confirming that, and B, any information that person's given you, you're now like immediately tailing your emails afterwards to that. And I think that's one of the things that I have done really well, that I have seen a major increase in response rate. If someone picks up or doesn't pick up, I immediately follow up with an email, and I usually try to make that lighthearted or fun or a gift or something in there. And this you can completely automate. This is not something you need to customize to per prospect or whatever like that, unless you've spoken to them and you want to completely customize it to them. But that's really helped me take my cold calling to the next level.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. One of my next questions was going to be, how does the phone fit in with the other channels? What's your view of kind of like the ideal multi-channel incorporating the phone?
Yes. Sales has really developed into in my mind, a great spot in terms of your customers here. And like, you got to find them in all these different little spokes, LinkedIn and Twitter and Facebook and events when we did events and emails and calls and you name it. And I think the one that gets lost a lot is referrals. I have so much success from referrals. And honestly, it's not even just referrals. A lot of times I'll reach out to someone and say, hey, Sarah, I saw you were connected to so-and-so on LinkedIn. Do you know him well enough to give me an intro? And sometimes it's yes, and sometimes it's nah, I met him at an event one time. I don't really know him. But look, if I land one out of every 10 of those, I'm thrilled with that. And even then, it doesn't necessarily mean I'm getting the meeting, but sales is all about surrounding it. I had a success story last week, actually two of them in different ways. LinkedIn audio messaging, like inside the messaging app, is really good as well. I had one, a guy the other day, he wrote back after I sent him an audio message. This is the last step in my sequence. This is like the last ditch effort. And he wrote back, he goes, all right, you've worn me down. Let's do this. So it's like, it's about surrounding the person. I use video. There's nothing other than probably text message right now that I won't do.
Why won't you do text?
I don't know. I can't get there yet. I don't know. I'm going to get there. I think it's probably going to happen this year. It feels so invasive to me. Now, look, I will tell you, if I've had a conversation with someone before, yeah, texting is all in at that point.
Right.
Just complete cold text outreach. The only time I will text cold outreach is if I call someone, get a voicemail, and their mailbox is full. I will say, Sarah tried to call you today, your mailbox is full. It's Kevin with Marketplace. Want to talk soon. Just something basic.
Okay. Definitely not pitching in that text message.
No. I get them though. I mean, they happen. So
yeah. Yeah. So then why does a cell phone call feel different, do you think, from text?
It's funny because there's still a lot of people out there that are so anti-calling mobile numbers.
Mm-hmm.
I am not at this point because someone broke it down for me one time expressly this way. And it made so much sense to me at this point. Anywhere provider you use to get your mobile numbers, I don't care who you use, they're all garnering it from some data source. The person whose number you're calling has used that on their signature, on their LinkedIn, on registering for an event or somewhere. That number is nowhere other than that person putting it out there.
Right.
So if that person's putting it out there, to me, that's fair game at that point.
Sure. You're not like getting it in any kind of sneaky way. It's out there for anybody to find. And so therefore, why shouldn't you call it? Yeah, correct. Makes sense. I want to go back to the referrals because I think it's a really great strategy. And as you mentioned, people forget this strategy a lot. Would you ever go for like a referral cold call where you're on purpose calling the wrong person to, or not the wrong person, but someone other than the right person to get a referral via the phone?
Oh, yeah. I do that via email too. So I call on marketing meters. I work on multiple different channels to get to that CMO, depending on the size of the company, but usually it's a CMO. So I work my way upscale through demand gen, VP, senior marketing, whoever I need to get to get up, knowing that the CMO is my ultimate decision maker. And I'm using everything I can. I'm still trying to set a meeting with these people and garner as much information, but I really don't a lot of times need a meeting. A cold call or an email response is best. I'm going top down from a CEO or a COO or president of the Americas or someone like that. I'm also going sideways a lot of times from a CRO, a VP of sales, or something like that, because a lot of times when I'm reaching, and this is going to differ per company, I'm reaching the marketing team. And at the end of the day, the marketing that they're doing and what I can help them with is going to affect the sales team dramatically. So if I can come in the side door and say to the sales leader, I'm going to help you guys, I'm going to make your job easier. And I run a whole cadence just towards salespeople, and I automate all of that. It just constantly runs in the background. I get that information. Man, if you can get a sales leader, now granted, salespeople are hard to sell to. So if you're selling to sales, VPs of sales, good for you. That's a tough, tough sell because we know what it's like. And we're unlikely to respond to a lot of this tactic. But coming in that side door, if you get that sales leader to give you this data, that is like earth shattering in terms of taking it to the CMO at that point. Like I write that email within minutes after getting an email from them and be like, I know you guys blankety blankety blank and third quarter sales were down. They're like, where in the hell did you get all this information? Like if you can't get a meeting with them at that point, you're probably not going to.
Right. Right. So you're sort of like mining information from whoever you can so that you're best equipped to attack that final decision maker. So say somebody tells you like, hey, I'm not the one who deals with this. It's so-and-so. You get a little information from them. What's your first move after having been given that information by the other person?
Well, first of all, it starts before I ever get off the phone or stop that email thread. I say like, hey, are you able to point and connect me directly with them? And sometimes they'll say, yep, absolutely. Can do that. No problem. Sometimes they're going to say, no, not really comfortable doing that. Like I gave you everything I need to go. I'm like, great, cool. No big deal. After I get the information, depending on what it is, and if it's good enough, I'm going right away, usually that CMO. Even if that CMO is in a cadence, I'll one-off email them and say, blah, blah, blah. Here's basically what I know now. Here's why I fit. Here's what I can help you with. here's the problem your team told me you have. Here's how I fix that. And that should change the conversation pretty quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, I want to get back to a couple of other phone tips and tricks, because something specifically that a lot of my SDRs are coming up against, that, and I know a lot of SDRs are looking for kind of good tips on this in particular, is navigating that gatekeeper. What is your move when it's a gatekeeper who picks
up? Again, they're a human. You got to be friendly. The good thing with gatekeepers is they're very easygoing. I shouldn't say easygoing. It's not fair. They're used to just getting spammed with phone calls left and right. So you're not like very unlikely going to piss them off unless you're calling four or five times a day. But you can almost call those people every day and keep trying to get in various different ways. And you just start every day chipping away, getting information, finding more information, even just more information about the gatekeeper. I have no problem doing research on gatekeeper to say like, hey, Sarah, I was on LinkedIn. I saw you got three kids, blah, blah, blah. Like, oh my God. Yeah. I have three kids too. Great. Like, boom. Like all of a sudden, like you start and that person may not still send you to the decision maker, but you may find out that a lot of times, and I've done this with gatekeepers all the time, and you ask questions. The email address I was emailing is wrong. A lot of times when you're calling someone in the C-suite, their email format is not like anyone else in the company. So I know for a fact multiple CMOs have almost like a dummy email address that just essentially collects the spam. They never check it, and it's just going in there. And they have another email address that people who know them communicate with them on. So you may start gleaning information here and there. The other thing I do is I'm emailing the decision maker as well and saying like, hey, I spoke to blah, blah, blah gatekeeper and she told me this or whatever. Mm-hmm. So like you're using any nugget of information you can get as you go through to get in.
Okay. And how do you deal with like, we won't go so far as the rejection. We'll get into that next, but how do you deal with just objections? What's the best way to come at an objection on the phone?
From the gatekeeper or just from anyone?
Just from anybody. I mean, it could be gatekeeper saying like, no, I don't want to connect you, or the prospect themselves.
Yeah. So, I mean, the prospect yourself, it depends what the objection is. If the objection is, hey, look, we've had a really tough year. COVID has sunk us. We're struggling to even float by right now. It's not a good prospect pick right now. Like for me, at least, like what I know about companies is, they're likely not going to spend in marketing if the company's in trouble. So like, I'm not writing them off completely, but for the next 3 months and go from there, I'll say like, hey, Sarah, is it okay? I get you. Is it fine if I call you back quarterly to check back in? And usually they're going to say yes. Or they're going to give you a better time. And, nope. 3 months isn't going to work. Call me back in July. Okay, great. We'll do. And then you just funnel it for July. If that objection is, this makes absolutely no sense for me, we have no need to do this. Your prospecting doesn't necessarily mean it was wrong. You think this company is a good fit. For whatever reason, the person who's the decision maker doesn't agree with you. That's part of selling as well, is like trying to convince people to do that. And it doesn't necessarily have to be one over the phone. I'll be upfront with them and say, that's great, Sarah. I understand this isn't a fit for you guys right now. Would you mind if I kept you in my nurture cadence for the next 6 months and followed up with you every 6 months just to see if anything's changed? And very rarely they're going to say no. You'd be surprised how many times those people just are not in the market for that at that time, but 3 months on the road, they email. And the other thing is, I get this one all the time, and I'm sure all salespeople get this, is we have your information. We'll call you when we're ready to work with you. Oh, that's great. So I can tell you right now, salespeople, I have done this 20 years and only one time has someone called me back and said, we're ready, let's talk. So I have made 50,000 phone calls, emails, you name it. I've had one person get back to me and say, now's the time. So no one's calling you back. So the objection to get around that is exactly that. I'll say, Sarah, I totally understand. This doesn't fit for you guys right now for the reasons you described to me. And I understand you said you're going to call me back. But I will tell you this. I've been doing this for 20 years, and no one has ever called me back before when they're ready. And usually what happens is you end up going with a competitor because you forget who I am. So would it be fair for me to call you back every 3 months? And it's very likely you're still going to get a no at that point, but that doesn't mean you can't call back within 3 months. So just keep going after them.
How do you deal with those smokescreen objections that come really early in the call where, you know, you're starting to say, for instance, that kind of opener that you have of like, hey, I know that you're dealing with this. And so I think that you're therefore dealing with that, you know, and they go like, oh, we're not interested. But of course, at that point, they don't even know what you do. So how can they be not interested? How do you tackle that?
I say exactly that. Sarah, you don't even know what I do. What aren't you interested in? And usually you get some snarky. We're just not interested in onboarding new vendors right now. I'd be like, how do you even know I'm a vendor? Like,
right.
And I'll say, and a lot of times I'll just be honest with them and say, Sarah, look, obviously I caught you at a bad time. Is it okay if I call you back next week? And truthfully, that's probably the case. I'm not there. My favorite one is, and I get this all the time, and I'm just flat honest with people. I believe in kind of radical candor in that regard. My favorite one is, I'm in the middle of a meeting. I can't handle this right now. And I say, you picked the phone up during the meeting? And they're like, well, it's starting any minute. I'm like, oh, well, I thought it was that person. So what I do immediately afterwards, and I just booked a meeting on this the other week, is I will respond back and say, like, sorry to catch you in a meeting, blah, blah, blah. I had a guy the other day. He's a CMO of a Fortune 500 company. And I caught him. I never have got him on the phone before, nor did I think I was going to get on the phone. He was expecting a mattress delivery. And he got a random number. It's just dumb luck, right time, right place.
Yeah.
And he picked up and I said, I start going in and I said, blah, blah, blah. And he goes, I'm really sorry. I thought you were my mattress delivery guy. They told me they were downstairs and they were going to call to get into my apartment. I said, no big deal. I'll let you go handle that. I followed up immediately with a GIF of like a car with a mattress bouncing on top. And like kind of something like, aren't you glad I didn't deliver your mattress, but I can't help you, blah, blah, blah. And that was one of the times I could tie it back to business. And he wrote back and goes, there's no way I can't book with you at this point. Thanks. so like it's, but all sales is just a numbers game. Like no email, texting, video, cold calling, whatever is going to work 100% of the time. Because if it did, we'd all be doing it and we'd all be multiple millionaires. So it's about sticking with it, trying new things, diversifying your tactics to get in front of your prospects.
Makes sense. One of my very last things on calls here that I'd love to hear your take on is the voicemail. What do you do for a voicemail?
I have read so much about like one out of every three should be a voicemail, like three out of four. I'm sure there's some type of science behind how many you should leave or whatever. I typically am leaving a voicemail on every single one. And after you start having that prospect go through your funnel, you know the people who you get to the very end of the voicemail, it's like, so-and-so's mailbox is full. So like, I will hang up on those. but like, I'm leaving a voicemail because it's just another touch point. I want them to hear my voice. I want them to hear my company name. I want them to, that's the guy. And honestly, I have had feedback from clients to say, I have heard from you many times. I know I needed to get in touch with you. I know you make sense for us. I just haven't had the time. I'm not going to sell myself short on any of that. I'm going to leave voicemail everywhere I can. I know on a lot of these multiple one-to-many calling programs like Connect and Sell, I know there's a bunch of them out there at this point. You can drop in voicemails. I'm totally for that as well. So I'm all for it. I'm pro voicemail.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for walking us through, everything that makes cold calling not only back, but still being a powerful channel that you've been using for many years. Incredible to hear, your experience, your take on how to leverage it to the best of our abilities. Now, let's imagine that there is a East Coast marketing leader listening right now. I want to give you the opportunity to pitch your services and also give all of our listeners and SDRs out there, sales reps, an opportunity to hear a sales veteran like yourself give their pitch. So why don't you give it to us?
Yeah. So my program Marketplace is specifically designed on helping C-suite executives, corporate decision maker, director level and above, the people who are pulling the purse strings in these companies. We're designed specifically on reaching these individuals. And there's really nothing better out there on the radio, TV, print aspect to reach corporate decision makers other than what we do. We offer category exclusivity. We do everything we can to put our clients on a pedestal. And I have your audience. I can help you reach them effectively. And a lot of times within a lot cheaper of a budget than you may even realize. So marketing leaders on the East Coast, and honestly, even if you're not on the East Coast, I can direct you to someone on my team who's not on the East Coast and who handles the West or the South for us. We have your audience. And I can help you reach them.
Awesome. Well, there you go, guys. Kevin, thank you so much for coming on the show. If people want to learn more from you, where can they get in touch with you?
Yeah, so LinkedIn's going to be the easiest way. I dirty secret, I don't turn LinkedIn acceptance down, so send that through. Second thing is I'm a member of Rev Genius and have been for, God, a year at this point. I love having conversations in there. In fact, I should use this as an opportunity to promote. We have a weekly, twice a week, cold calling session in there that is, not everyone goes to everyone, but it is great. We share tips. We share what's working, what's not working, what's working in conjunction with cold calling. Even there's so many people that are coming in for the first time. We have contests with prizes. So inside Rev Genius, there's all kinds of fun cold calling things to help you get better at that as well.
Well, there you guys go. You can check Kevin out on LinkedIn. You can check out Rev Genius to, if you guys are now really amped about the idea of cold calling and want to get some practice in, sounds like that's a really great place to learn tips and tricks from other people that are all using it just like Kevin is. So once again, Kevin, thank you so much. And thank you all you guys for coming to another episode of the podcast, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks, Sarah. Have a great day. See you, everyone.